The Big Question.
The big question today really is a big question, and we're going to tackle it as much as we can. Book bidding wars. In the publishing industry, how is a book pitched and acquired? It's a really big topic, and we're just basically going to get started with it today. We couldn't do it without our guest in the studio today, Talia Suzuma. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
So just to introduce Talia to you, basically, she is an expert guest. She's an editor. She's worked for Pan Macmillan, HarperCollins, and also Bloomsbury. And I believe you're the founder of the Middle East branch of the literary consultancy.
That's right. So not so much the founder, that was set up in the UK 20 years ago, but setting up the Middle East branch of it out here. So helping writers based here to get in touch with the publishing industry, see how their novel might stand out in the market, and understand kind of how to navigate that really complicated process of getting an agent and getting a publisher.
Well, it's lovely to have you in the studio today. And the reason why I brought you on was I saw this article on LitHub, which is a great great website, by the way. If you're interested in books and book news, lithub.com is a great place to go. And it was this article about seven-figure advances. And we hear about these occasionally. There's always something that pops up and says, this book was acquired for a crazy amount of money. And it's kind of, it's not every single author. It's quite rare, isn't it?
It's definitely very rare. Aspiring writers don't give up the day job just yet. Usually 6 or 7 figure advances happen for two reasons. So one reason will be that you already are a best-selling writer. You are the William Boyds or the Jan Martels of this world, and you're writing another novel. Your publisher desperately wants to keep you on board and doesn't want you to be lured by a rival publisher. So they have to make sure that the advances are as big as possible. So that's option one. Option two, which is even more exciting, is I guess the title of this big question, is that your book, you're a debut novelist, and your book gets into a bidding war. So it's so good that several publishers are wanting to buy it. And it's a bit like an auction for an antique at Christie's. Essentially, all the acquiring editors from the different publishing houses throw out a figure, and then the best figure wins the book. The agent will work the deal really carefully and will say, oh, X publisher has offered $100,000. Then the next publisher will go, okay, well, we'll go higher, and so on and so forth, until you get these crazy big figures.
And the thing I've noticed is often if it's a big name author who had a really successful first novel, it's a lot easier for those bidding wars to start for, say, their second or third that's highly anticipated and they haven't written something for, say, 10 years.
Definitely. So publishing is quite innovative, but it's also really risk averse. So each acquiring editor, and I've been in that position, is essentially having to gamble. We're basically betting on horses. And if you're betting on a book, on an author, I'm sorry, who's already written a best-selling book, then that risk is really diminished. So it's much less of a risky proposition. So you know that that writer has a following. You know that there are, in a sense, some guaranteed sales. So by giving them a huge advance, you're less worried about them not being able to earn out. Now, earning out is an interesting one because an advance sounds like just a big paycheck with no strings attached, but actually it's a little bit more of a loan. You're given an advance as a writer. It's an advance against your earnings in terms of royalties. So you actually have to earn out the royalties in order for your publisher to then start giving you the own royalties that you deserve. I don't know if that makes sense. So it's a loan, and then you as an author start accumulating royalties, so say 10%, 50% for every novel that gets sold, but you only start seeing those royalties
after the amount of the advance.
Exactly. So the bigger the advance, the longer you have to wait until you start actually seeing your royalties.
Right. That's interesting. I thought it was literally a paycheck. I thought it was the publishing house paying you to write the book or to have your book. That's really interesting.
One that that made me think of on this list was Back to Blood by Tom Wolfe, who recently passed away. So apparently back in 2008, he threw over his longtime publisher, Farrar, Straus & Giroux, to sell the rights to his next novel, to Little Brown, for close to 7 million dollars, which is, I don't know how much that is in dirhams, but it's an awful lot of money. Despite the fact that his previous novel hadn't exactly sold well, relative to its advance at least, in the end, though, it did grace the bestseller list for 3 weeks. Back to Blood did even worse. So in that situation, that $7 million, let's use that as an example, he wouldn't have made that in the end, ultimately.
Yeah, so that's known as not earning out. And it's really tricky because publishing is just pretends to be a science, and we pretend to have, you know, spreadsheets and profit and loss sheets, but actually it's some of it is done on prestige. So a publishing house might decide that even though they're going to make a loss on novelist X, because novelist X is demanding such a huge advance, that publishing house might decide it's worth it for the prestige of having that author on our list, because then we get leverage with the big retailers, the high street retailers. We can say, well, we have this amazing novelist X, so therefore can you give us a bit better deal,
and attracting other novelists of the same kind of ilk. Yeah,
so it's a real business. People don't realize that in their W.H. Smith's and in the supermarkets, those slots that look like number one, number two bestsellers are all paid for slots by the publishers.
With the loan, so in that example, if he was giving a $7 million advance, if the book doesn't make, does he pay it back?
No. So I say it's a loan, and that's not quite right. You don't pay it back. And that's where, actually, that's quite a good idea, Natalie. That might be a better business model for publishers.
What have you done?
All these writers are going, no!
But I think publishers would probably have less trouble making money if that was the case. But no.
What was the... Jessie Burton was one that you mentioned off air. She made the headlines recently for a big advance, I think.
Right. Well, actually, Jessie Burton's an interesting one. So I mentioned those two cases of big advances, one being the Tom Wolfe's of the world and the second being the amazing debut writers who just take the world by storm. And so Jessie Burton took the world by storm with The Miniaturist. And I was working at HarperCollins at the time when it came in on submission. And there was just... It came in from a really great UK-based agent, and we know that we like her stuff, and she's published a few, she represents a few bestsellers, so we always pay attention when novels from this agent come in. And ripples just went round the office floor. People loved it, and the next thing we know, there's a huge bidding war across publishers throughout the UK, and then it goes to Picador, Pam Macmillan, a UK publisher, for a large advance, because other people wanted it, and so you had to kind of give them a big figure. But in that instance, the book did so well, and so it really paid off for Picador. They took a gamble on the white horse in that instance.
Do you think that it puts aspiring writers off? Because these seven-figure advances, do you think people think that they are automatically, as a debut novelist, going to have that opportunity? Do you think it gets people's hopes up?
That's a good question. I think ultimately writers write because they really, really love writing. And there's so many other kind of easier jobs to do. And I think, it comes from a really like innate sense of creativity. I think that if they start thinking about the business aspect of it too soon, it can really sort of dampen down on their creativity. And I've had writers say to me, I want to write a bestseller, so what sells? And I'll write that. Is it a crime? Is it a psychological thriller with a female hero with the title sort of girl in the title?
Right.
So, and they'll be like literally writing by numbers. And so that's not the best way of doing it. I think if you're kind of really aiming for a seven-figure advance, it's probably going to be really difficult for you to write freely and write something that's actually true and authentic to you.
Moving away from the money side of things, so from your point of view, when for example an agent sends you something, have there been any memorable moments where you've received something and immediately you've known, okay, this is brilliant, what's the next step?
Okay, so you get this like surge of adrenaline. It's really, really exciting because editors get maybe 10 to 15 manuscripts sent to them a week. And we only publish sort of 6 or 7 or up to 15 books a year. So there's a lot of reading that goes on and a lot of stuff that we can't publish that isn't brilliant, or we publish something similar. So when we get something that we think we can publish, it's so exciting. Then you have to take a deep breath and convince your bosses that this book is as good as you think it is, and it's a really long, difficult process.
Is it scary for you to because you may feel, I know this is something, but in the back of your mind you must have the, but what if it isn't? What if I've totally got this one wrong?
Yes, it's really scary. And I think because, I mean, like all of us in this room, we love books. There's also something just a little bit gutting when you love a book. I'm sure you guys have done this and recommended it to someone who means a lot to you. And then that person was like, what?
It's
no.
Heartbreaking.
Yes. It's heartbreaking.
It really makes you question your friendships and your relationships.
Yeah. Or when they say, I didn't even finish it. And you're like, what? Keep going.
Because I think when you recommend a book or when you say publicly, I love this book, you're actually revealing something of yourself. And so to stand up in a business meeting as a youngish editor and to sort of really put yourself out there and say, this is really special, and then for them to go away and read it, and then for the next week for them to pull it apart, you feel like you're being attacked personally. And so the first layer is the editorial meeting, and that's usually more cozy because you're talking to fellow editors who just love books.
The big question.
So book bidding wars is in the publishing industry, how is a book pitched and acquired? We're in the middle of talking about that. And in the guest chair, we have Talia Suzuma, whose background in publishing covers HarperCollins, Pan Macmillan, Bloomsbury. You've been an editor and you've been in those meetings you were just saying where you kind of have to really stand by a book that you love and pitch it to people who may not agree with you.
That's right. I think lots of people think that an editor has complete power, and if they like a book, that's it. But actually, if you like a book, that's really the beginning of the battle. So you have the editorial meeting, which is a bit more sort of friendly, and then you have the business meeting where you're talking to the head of sales, the head of marketing, all the kind of numbers guys who are quite forceful in their questioning, and really all they're thinking about, and it's a business so it makes sense, but has to be the bottom line. So you prepare a profit and loss sheet, you have to estimate how many books you'll sell, and the sales team will give you a figure. Then you have to ask the marketing team for a budget and they'll give you a figure, and you plug it all into a spreadsheet, and if the result doesn't come out the way you want it, you're not allowed to acquire the book.
It is amazing that a spark of creativity that, you know, wants to create this artistic narrative ends up in a profit loss sheet in Excel.
That's very frustrating for the editors, for the writers, and for the agents. Yeah, but it's, I guess, the frustration of marrying art with commerce.
Exactly,
it's really
yeah.
tricky.
And yeah. with a brand new writer and a debut novel, how do you kind of make a projection of what you think the sales are going to be, because you don't have a comparison on past work?
That's right. So what we do, we're horribly derivative and we just love a copycat. So as an editor, we're meant to say in the business meeting, this book is a cross between Harry Potter and Charles Dickens or something.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. Just very briefly, Emma Doney Shillington have asked, what about self-publishing? Can you do it here? We will answer your question in a few minutes once we've gone on over this topic for a little bit longer, but stay tuned and we'll get to your question in a little while. I remember doing a workshop with you a long time ago, I think in preparation for the Montegrappa Writing Prize.
That's right, in 2016.
And a big part of that process was you went around the table and you asked everybody to pitch their novel, and I thought that was really interesting. And using that idea that you said, where it's kind of Independence Day meets Bridget Jones,
right,
as a way of kind of pitching the book. And sometimes I read novels and I've got that in my head, and I'm reading, like, this is nothing like what's on the back of the book. But sometimes they really do hit the nail on the head. But it's really important, isn't it?
That's right. So going back to Natalie's question, it's really important for the sales team, who won't have time to read the whole book, or indeed, not pointing fingers, they may not read it at all, but they might give you a sort of projection on sales figures based on what you tell them. It's X meets Y. But then in terms of positioning the book once we're publishing, going back to Annabelle's point, every aspect of the book, from the title to the front cover to the blurb, the copy on the back of the jacket, even sometimes to the author's name, we have changed author's names before, it's all geared towards positioning the book. And that means, positioning means attracting readers who will enjoy it. So having a book like Girl on the Train look like a psychological thriller and not look like cozy, quiet women's fiction, feel good with a glass of just making sure that you don't read something and think, pick up a book and think you're going to get one thing and actually get something completely different.
The cover is so important, isn't it? I mean, when you're picking a book in the bookshop, that's the first thing, isn't it? The title, maybe you know the author, but seeing the front of it and seeing the design and all of that, it immediately you start making assumptions on what type of book
Absolutely.
It is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's really important.
So cover designers are probably have the most important job in the entire publishing house. They're very patient and they get very frustrated by being told all sorts of really difficult briefs. Like, I want it to look like a summer's day, but with a hint of menace. I mean, really hard to translate.
Like, but what do you want?
Yeah.
So how does that start for, I'm slightly off topic here, but in book cover design, are they given, I mean, are the briefs all that vague?
The briefs can be really vague. What we tend to do, what we actually know, what we all do, and again, it's that sense of being quite derivative, is do a thing called cover comps, so cover comparisons. So we get little JPEGs on the cover brief of other books and say, it's like this. Mm. This is the genre. I'm not saying I want it to look like this. So if I have like a red cover, I'm not saying I want it red, but I want it to appeal to the same kind of readers.
I'm just going to go to this question here. Emma and Johnny Shillington have asked, what about self-publishing? Can you do it here? I'm going to jump in and say what I think is self-publishing. The beauty of it is that you can kind of do it anywhere, really. What's your take on that?
That's right. Hi, Emma and Johnny. You can do it everywhere. I think Amazon is probably your best friend in this instance. You can use Amazon Kindle and they take you through the process really step by step and explain exactly what you need to do. One of the advantages of self-publishing is that you get a much higher royalty rate. You will see much more money immediately for each book sale. Definitely, especially if you have a platform, definitely a great route to explore. And more publishers are actually acquiring books that started off as self-published, like 50 Shades of Grey.
That was a surprising one as well. That was an example of one of those debut novels that kind of took the world by storm. And didn't that have a crazy advance as well?
Yes, definitely. And it definitely took the world by storm. But I think it was a really good example to show authors that there's nothing wrong with self-publishing.
The Martian started out as a self-published book
exactly.
as well.
So there you can, go. Just because I am new to this kind of, so you can self-publish and then publish kind of again with
yes.
a publishing house.
Oh, okay. So remember we spoke about publishers being super risk averse, and this is really easy. This is so nice for them. It's almost like a trial. The author has put all the costs up front and published themselves, and then if the book has really taken off because you can see the sales figures, they'll go, oh great, okay, this author now has a platform, we'll publish their second book.
And is that a kind of a strand of the business that there will be people working looking for people who have already self-published and bringing them to the publishing house, and so, or does the author approach and say, I've already self-published, would you like to also?
Happens both ways. So in about 2010, when self-publishing was really taking off, all the editors at HarperCollins were kind of given a mandate to start looking at the self-publishing lists, but also we get authors who approach us themselves.
Right. Another thing that I wanted to mention was on the show before with Flora, Head of Education, Training and Publishing at the Emirates Literature Foundation, she mentioned that she'd gone to Abu Dhabi Book Fair, and Wattpad was a really big conversation as well. So Emma and Johnny, you should also look into Wattpad, because I think there, like you say, there are publishers who are specifically looking at entries on Wattpad as to what has the most views, I think, and picking up a few novels from there. And at the moment, I think the biggest genre is probably YA fiction, I believe.
That's right. Wattpad is really great, and also you create a community. So a little bit like Dickens and Dostoevsky, you end up serializing your book.
Yeah.
So you write a chapter at a time, you can kind of tweet about it, you can get people to follow or to ask you to change the characters. It's really fun, interactive way of publishing. And so Johnny and Emma, I look forward to reading your book.
And this question comes up quite a lot. We get quite a few self-publishing questions. So I think we will put together something on Talking of Books that's specifically about self-publishing in the future. So if you keep checking the Dubai Eye Facebook page, we'll notify you when that happens in the near future. And thank you for your question as well. Natalie, do you have any more questions for Talia?
I'm just really interested. I find this absolutely fascinating because not really knowing about the publishing side of things so much, I had a completely different view of it. So I honestly thought that the publisher will pay the author writes the book, and it's like a transaction in that way. So I'm really interested in this. It's a lot from the author's point of view. You have to really take your life in your hands, don't you? You have to really kind of go in there and say please, like, you know. And what's the statistics of how many books is it really bad that you read it and authors that never get published, or is it
well, put it this way. So at HarperCollins we had in one imprint, so publisher is divided into different imprints. You have like commercial, literary, so my imprint was commercial. You had maybe 8 acquiring editors who would each get about at least 5, 10, 15 submissions a week, and we only published 100 books a year, but probably 70% of those, sorry, I'm throwing numbers at you, 70% of those were books from already existing authors. So maybe only 30 new authors a year. So the stats aren't great. However, there are lots of publishers. I think my advice for any aspiring writers who's listening to this and finding this really discouraging is to also remember that writing is a journey and to enjoy the process, to kind of let go. I'm also a yoga teacher. I've just come from the studio and I was saying this in class actually today, like, let go of the end result. You might be wanting to do the splits, but let go of that. Just enjoy where you are right now. And if that doesn't sound too wishy-washy, I'd really recommend writers to enjoy what they're writing and really write from the heart. And then when they're ready, take a deep breath and put the editor agent hat on. But when you're writing, just keep the writer hat
on. And what you were saying earlier I think is really important, this idea about people not writing a book in order to be a bestseller, you know, really write from that creative place. And I guess I would say probably most writers are like that. They write because they love writing, and then someone might say, you should get that published, that's really good, you should try. And then they think, oh, okay, well, maybe I will then, you know. It's that kind of, and that's, for me, feels like the organic way to do it.
Definitely.
I think we have to go to a break shortly, do we?
Very shortly, but Finn has just texted in. He says, always love the show. Thank you very much. He says, I disagree that the cover of a book is important. I consider the synopsis sells a book for me. Controversial.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's great to hear. But I think authors would find it really difficult that they're, as Natalie said, kind of putting their life in someone else's hands, putting the life in the hands of the cover artist.
And that's a really interesting question for maybe for our listeners, is how do you pick a book? Because like I was saying about looking at the cover, but also the blurb on the back. So you read that and then you think, oh yeah, this is something I can. And some people, I know friends of mine, say they always just read the first couple of pages. So they'll stand in a bookshop and read the first page. And if they feel like, yeah, I could get into this. But then do you miss out? Because we've probably all read books where it gets going after the first couple of chapters. I know I've lent books to people and said, it's great, it takes a bit of getting into, but it is great, and by the end of it you'll be glad you persevered.
It's such a big topic that we don't have time but the one thing I do want to mention is I heard about a bookshop, or I think there's a couple of them, where they purposely wrap the books up so that you can't see the covers, and so you don't judge a book by its cover. Although I have to say I absolutely love covers, and as much as the saying goes, I do completely the opposite, and I do judge a book by its cover.
Yes.
Talia, thank you so much for joining us on the show. It's been a pleasure to have you. Hopefully we'll see you back on the show in a few weeks or months if you're still around over the summer.
Great to be here. Thanks so much.